is held at the Iranian embassy in Syria to commemorate the military advisors killed in Monday's Israeli attack on the consular section of the mission. The death toll from nearly 6 months of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza now surpasses 32,970, mostly women and children. And the UN chief says attacks on aid workers in Gaza are unconscionable after an Israeli airstrike killed 7 of them. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. The Iranian embassy in Syria has held a ceremony to pay homage to the 7 military advisors who were killed in Monday's Israeli attack on the consular section of the diplomatic mission. We were joined by our correspondent, Ibrahim Wahdi, from Damascus, who said that several Syrian officials visited the Iranian mission to pay tribute to the martyrs.
We are here at the embassy, the Iranian embassy in Damascus, where the Iranian embassy just began to receive condolences for the martyrs who were assassinated by an Israeli airstrike on Monday evening. Yesterday at night, the ceremonies of funeral ceremonies were held at Sayyid al-Ruqayya Shrine in Damascus Old City, in the heart of the Damascus, pay respect to the martyrs. Today we are seeing senior officials coming to pay their respect to the martyrs and to offer condolences to the Iranian, to the Islamic Republic of Iran and its people for the martyrdom of these IRGC senior leaders. So far we have received a religious delegation representative of the Imam Ali Khamenei office, also some Palestinian figures, Palestinian faction leaders. There's the charge d'affaires of the Venezuelan embassy. We have also the representative now next to me, the representative of Sayyid al-Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei office in Syria. We have the representative of the Islamic resistance in Iraq, in Syria, Sayyid Ali Mousavi just arrived. We are expecting also some governmental figures from the Syrian government. As we know, yesterday the head of the government, Prime Minister Sayyid Hussein Arnous, came to the embassy. He met with the ambassador. He checked the place. He was heading a senior governmental delegation with the Minister of Foreign Affairs and the Minister of Economy, the Minister of Media, along with other ministers. They checked the site, they paid their condolences and offered their full support from Syria to the Islamic Republic of Iran.
The United Nations Security Council has held an emergency meeting on the latest Israeli attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria. Addressing the event, Iran's deputy representative to the UN called on the world body to vehemently denounce Israel's violation of the international regulations.
Regrettably, the absence of accountability and the Council's inaction has only encouraged and even emboldened this regime to continue its violation unchecked. It is high time for the Security Council to shoulder its responsibility and address the real threat to international peace and security. The Security Council must promptly fulfill its duty in response to Israel's reckless defiance. Urgent and enforceable measures must be taken to compel this regime to uphold its obligations.
Zahra Ershadi said Israel is defying Security Council resolutions and shows disregard for its international obligations. Syria's ambassador to the UN also called the attack a grave violation of international laws and norms. He said the Arab country holds Israel and the U.S. fully accountable. The Syrian official added the Israeli regime would not have dared to attack other nations' diplomatic premises if it wasn't for Washington's blind support. The Russian ambassador, whose country had called the meeting, slammed the airstrike as a flagrant violation of Syria's sovereignty. He said Israel seeks to further fuel the regional conflicts. China's envoy also condemned Israel's attack as a grave violation of the UN Charter and international law, and a breach of the sovereignty of both Syria and Iran. Political commentator Masoud Shajara is joining us now from the British capital, London. Mr. Shajara, welcome to the program. First of all, I want to get your perspective on this recent illegal attack that the Israelis have carried out against the Iranian consulate in the Syrian capital, Damascus.
I mean, it really is outrageous. I mean, the fact of the matter is, there is no question that this is unlawful, this is provocative, this is actually goes against all aspects of international law, that this is escalation of the insecurity in the whole region and indeed beyond. There is really no question on this. I mean, I don't think anyone with a slight intellect will be able to say anything other than these factual realities. But what is really so shocking is not the fact that there is a silence by the international community, is the fact that the Western so-called allies under the leadership of United States are actually encouraging this by arming and supporting and giving total sort of support to all barbaric action over the last few months of this rogue state, this regime. And that is why it's been encouraged to do this. And by doing so, we are sleepwalking into conflict going much wider and indeed becoming a world conflict and engulfing not just nations in the region, but far beyond. This is something that needs to be addressed. I mean, the reality is that the United States cannot be so naive and stupid to think that this sort of action is not going to create reaction and indeed would lead to conflict becoming much wider. Why is it that it's going on with its total and unquestionable support, giving arms to this rogue state to be enabled to do this sort of abuses, which is on a scale that it has never, ever happened, definitely in my lifetime.
All right, thanks a lot, Masoud Shajara, a political commentator joining us from the British capital, London. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has vowed Tehran will make the Israeli regime regret its deadly airstrike on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remark in a message of condolence on the martyrdom of a group of Iranian military advisors in the Monday attack. The leader described Israel as a hated occupying regime. He vowed that the evil regime will be punished. Ayatollah Khamenei also saluted the martyrs of the attack, including two senior IRGC commanders, Major General Mohammad Reza Zahiri and General Mohammad Hadi Haj Rahimi. The UN Secretary General has denounced as unconscionable the Israeli killing of several international aid workers on duty in the Gaza Strip.
The devastating Israeli airstrikes that killed World Central Kitchen personnel yesterday bring the number of aid workers killed in this conflict to 196, including more than 175 members of our own UN staff. This is unconscionable. It demonstrates yet again the urgent need for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire, the unconditional release of all hostages, and the expansion of humanitarian aid into Gaza, as the Security Council demanded in its resolution last week. The resolution must be implemented without delay.
Meanwhile, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says the war on Gaza has witnessed the highest number of aid worker deaths ever recorded in any conflict. An Israeli airstrike left 7 aid workers associated with U.S.-based charity World Central Kitchen dead. in the Gaza Strip on Monday. The head of the charity called the incident a targeted attack. The Israeli killing of the World Central Kitchen Aid staff has drawn international reactions. Western countries have called on Israel to offer an explanation. The regime unleashed its war on Gaza in early October, killing at least 32,975 Palestinians, mostly women and children. The Israeli massacres in the Gaza Strip have continued unabated in the past 6 months. Israel, with the help of the U.S., is committing genocide of epic proportions, yet the U.S. refuses to accept the fact that Israel is committing genocide, going against the belief of many countries and organizations like the UN and the ICJ, the International Court of Justice. Let's look at the reasons why Israel is guilty of this crime. This Sunday, April 7th, marks 6 months since Israel executed its U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza and the Palestinians. When it comes to this aggression, there's no doubt what the Israeli killing machine is doing is genocide. It's worth looking at some of the instances where an act of genocide has taken place. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Rights Situation in the Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, said recently, "There are reasonable grounds to believe Israel is committing the crime of genocide against the Palestinians as a group in Gaza," cited in her report titled "Anatomy of a Genocide." But why reasonable grounds and not definite ones? Like the Al-Shifa Hospital massacre, up to 400 Palestinians were killed, many of them women and children. Bodies recovered after the regime forces withdrew from their operation looking for Hamas fighters and operatives. An eyewitness account said, "The Shifa Hospital massacre is worse than the 1948 Nakba's Deir Yassin and Tantura massacres combined. Over 300 women and children were slaughtered, many zip-tied and executed, some flattened by tanks, burned or hacked into pieces by missiles. Skeletal remains and body parts were everywhere." The 1948 Nakba and Tantura massacres were committed by the Israeli regime between 1947 and 1949, where Zionist forces took more than 78% of historic Palestine, ethnically cleansed and destroyed about 530 villages and murdered 15,000 Palestinians, which included more than 70 massacres. Another example of a massacre called the Flower Massacre occurred when starving Palestinians gathered around an aid convoy in hopes of getting food, yet they were faced with a barrage of bullets which claimed the lives of at least 112, with 760 wounded. Israel blamed the carnage on a Palestinian stampede. One of the first mass casualties of the genocidal war occurred at the Al-Ahli Hospital. On the 17th of October 2023, a devastating explosion took place in the car park of the Al-Ahli Hospital in Gaza City. Around 500 people were murdered and 342 injured. The excuse by Israel, a misfired missile by a resistance group. And here are other notable massacres. Each brings back painful memories of a genocide that is being transmitted in real time on everyone's TV and mobile screens, each in its own more shocking than the other, which brings us to the question, where are there any doubts about whether a genocide is taking place? Some Israeli officials themselves have openly called for the genocide of Palestinians, like the Israeli Heritage Minister, who said dropping a nuclear bomb on the Gaza Strip is an option. Yoav Gallant, Israeli Minister of Military Affairs, who said Gaza will not return to what it was before and we will eliminate everything. And a Knesset member who called for erasing all of Gaza from the face of the earth. Well, moving on, four Israeli troopers have been injured in a car ramming attack at a military checkpoint in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military claims the operation was conducted by a Palestinian man who was later killed by the regime's forces. Our correspondent, Tinwal Anamonokandil, joined us earlier with more details. Let's take a listen.
Well, according to Israeli military, after midnight, a Palestinian man in his vehicle arrived at a checkpoint near the city of Atiri in the lands occupied in 1948 Central Israel, known as Central Israel. He rammed his vehicle into Israeli policemen or officers and wounded at least four of those. One of them was in serious condition. Then he left the area after a chase. He succeeded to reach a military checkpoint known as Eliyahu near the city of Netanya, also inside the lands that were occupied in 1948. There he exited his vehicle and tried to stab Israeli officers there, as they are saying. And then the Israeli soldiers opened fire at him, shot him, and killed him. So the Israeli military are saying that this man is 26 years old from the city of Atiri that was occupied in 1948, and he's now from the occupied West Bank. The Israelis were warned that Palestinians who are still living in the in historical Palestine, let's say, had been carrying out anti-Israeli operations in the last few months, and a number of Palestinians there had been killed, whether for stabbing Israeli soldiers and officers, or for carrying out ramming attacks. And sometimes Palestinians had used guns to shoot and kill Israeli forces. At the end of the day, the Israeli troops had killed, let's say, since the 7th of October, Palestinians from all the occupied territories, whether the West Bank, the occupied Al-Quds, or even in the lands occupied in 1948, had killed over 457 Palestinians. Of course, we are saying that the majority of those were shot and killed here in the occupied West Bank during military incursions at military checkpoints, and others were members of the resistance groups, in addition to the fact that children and women had also been killed by the Israeli forces in cold blood here in the occupied West Bank.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Çömen. Yani?
Bazaar.
Historically, humans lived a colourful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But what brought humans into the valleys and grasslands, and later into a collective society? Some argue wheat domesticated mankind, settling humans permanently next to their fields. Humans have come a long way from traditional farming. Presently, some 38% of the Earth's surface is used to cultivate crops. Technology has revolutionized agricultural production, leading to more food security worldwide.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This time, we will explore the agriculture industry. We shine the spotlight on the marriage between technology and science for high-yield agricultural productions. We wanted to see how the agricultural sector is developing new ways to increase the efficiency of natural resource use, while also elevating the quality of cultivated food. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's walk through the fields of today's bazaar.
Our quest for answers led us to a company in Khorasan Razavi province that specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechie, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini tubers. So what is a mini tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received 3 consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress. As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs 1/5 of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same 2-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are 2 of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons.
However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
In case you didn't know, and most don't actually, the country is home to more than 7% of global mineral reserves. That's significant. With over 80 different types of minerals, Iran is one of the top 10 mineral-rich countries globally. In total, the country has about 60 billion tons of proven mineral reserves, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world.
The mining ministry says the total production value in this sector is over $700 billion. This value has not been unnoticed by the government, which has been seriously pursuing several programs promoting the mining sector. Despite its enormous riches, Iran has yet to unlock its full potential as this key sector is still struggling to operate at full capacity. There are several reasons for this. One is a lack of necessary machinery and equipment for expanding this industry. So, the government is focusing on geological exploration, extraction, and research of new products as part of areas for development. Another one of the government's programs to increase production is to increase mineral extraction. So, organizations have embarked on reviving idle mines. Out of 10,000 mines in the country, around 4,000 of them are idle. It's noteworthy that over the last 2 years, some 500 small-scale idle mines have been brought back to life. That's based on the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. One of the benefits of the ongoing revival plan has been the rise in nationwide employment. Presently, well over 100,000 miners are at work in the sector.
Mining in Iran has more work to be done, and it's still under development. Still, there are plenty of doers in this country, and plenty more waiting for further investment opportunities. Iran's productions by far outweigh its domestic use, leaving lots of room for mineral exports. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact.
Figures from Iran's trade promotion organization show a record high of nearly $12 billion worth of minerals and mining products were exported last year. This means there was roughly an 80% increase in exports year on year. Championing the export list in terms of value were steel ingots and related products, copper, aluminium, zinc, and iron. This is a pretty big growth spurt, actually. But government officials say export figures could be much higher if raw materials and other mining products could be further developed with added value. So, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized products in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. The current Iranian calendar year slogan was knowledge-based production and job creation. The title was given by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The goal is to promote and increase support for companies that engineer and produce advanced products that contribute to the economy.
Well, it's that time of the show where I should step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague is actually out there on the field. So, let's see that report.
In the modern world today, both industrialized and developing countries have modern installations capable of highly efficient fabric production. In addition to mechanical improvements in yarn and fabric manufacture, there have been rapid advances in the development of new fibers, processes to improve textile characteristics, and testing methods allowing greater quality control. Today, we visited Aram Takmil Teyfe Faraz company, active in the textile industry in Iran. In this company, there are various activities such as processes of weaving, dyeing, and finishing, and printing of different types of textiles while employing the strongest technical staff as well as modern European dyeing and finishing machines to finally meet customer satisfaction with quality products and innovations. Iran's textile industry has a capacity to produce a wide variety of products suitable for different market segments, both within Iran and across the world. Over the past years, close to 30,000 tons of different types of textile were imported. Presently, however, there are 78 textile factories active in the country, producing 90 million square meters of different kinds of fabric every year. Iran's Development Plan Vision 2025 has identified textile and clothing as one of the potential industries for expansion. The plan basically emphasizes on the need for technological advancements and improvement in productivity.
Many thanks for that awesome adventure, as always. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition. I'm Samson Sees. Sees you soon.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us. The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. We need to protect our brothers and also their families. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, he says, من رد عن إرض أخيه المسلم وجبت له الجنة البت. Whoever defends the ard is in Arabic refers to the wife or the daughters of a person. We refer to them as ardul insan. They are his honor and dignity. He says any person who defends that wife or sister or mother of that person, he says the jannah, heaven, becomes wajib for him 100%, albatta, guaranteed. See, you're sitting with a gathering and a person says, oh, did you see what the wife of Fulan did? Did you see what his sister did? Did you see what his daughter did? Did you see who she spoke to? You say to them, hold on, hold on. What she did is her problem. What she did is her thing. If she did, you have no right to talk about her. This guy, her friend, her brother, her husband, they are my brothers in faith. I do not give you the right to speak. And especially we as a human being, sometimes we just sick in the head because shaitan just whispers and we listen. That makes us sick. And what we do is, we just start to throw accusation at women who belong to our brothers in faith, either their wives or either their daughters, without even knowing what's going on.
without having any shred of proof or evidence, because Fulan said, and I like Fulan, because he or she said, and they are my friends. Them being your friends does not qualify them, does not give them the right to come and talk about other people's. So the Prophet said, it is your duty to protect them. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam was narrated that he said, من غتيب عنده أخوه المؤمن فنصره وأعانه نصره الله في الدنيا والآخرة. He who his brother is being backbitten in front of him and he defends him, he said, Allah will defend this person in this world and also in the hereafter. وَمَنْ لَمْ يَنْصُرْهُ, and whoever does not support and defend that brother in his absence, وَلَمْ يَدَافَعَنْ, and does not defend him, وَهُوَ يَقْدِرْ, while he has the capacity. Some people, like مَغْلُوبٌ عَلَى أَمْرَهُ, he has no choice, he cannot say anything or do anything because he's in a majlis, in a gathering where the sultan, a person of power, is there, and if he says anything it would be the death of him. But in a normal gathering, me and you, no one holding a gun to our heads, surely we can stop these people from talking. It doesn't matter who it is. It could be my dad, my brother, my sister, my friend. I can tell them this is haram, this is ghibah. So the Imam says, if he can, but he doesn't, خَذَلَهُ اللَّهُ, Allah will betray that person, وَحَقَّرَهُ, and he will humiliate that person, فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ, in this world and in the hereafter. And like I said, when Allah gets involved in this, when he says, I will do this to you, and this is where I back off, and this is where we all need to back off. Let us take a short break and then we will continue.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح جنان است چه فلان دماغی و سواب داره فلان روزون
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فلان درخکاری اینجا کم سواب داره دعا هم داره سواب هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته دارن گفته اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دقل ثواب داره
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون اینا هم امام گفته دیگه
When growing wheat take some in your hand and say these prayers These are what the very Imam has mentioned
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی
We lack this second volume in Islamic world
We are discussing, and we have been discussing, the moral support that we need to give to our brothers and sisters in faith. One of the things that falls under that category is to forgive their mistakes. Now, they are human beings like me and you. Males and females, they're not infallible, they're not ma'sumeen, they're not prophets, they're not rusul, they are merely human beings. And us being human beings, it means we will make mistakes. That's the simple reality of it. I make mistakes. You make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. We sin. We commit a lot of evil acts throughout our life because we are not infallible. Inshallah, we strive not to. That's the aim, that's the mission, not to make mistakes. But if we do, it's part of our nature. We're human beings, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala accepts that from us, as long as we repent, obviously. So you will meet a lot of brothers who will make mistakes, who will commit sins. With you, against you, with others, this is going to happen. Now, what is my duty, your duty, when one of us does something wrong? If I do wrong by you, what is your duty towards me? If you do something towards me, what is my duty towards you? The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam will answer. He says, and be brothers to one another the way Allah has commanded you to do. وَلَا تَتَنَافَرُوا and do not start hating one another. وَلَا تَتَنَازَعُوا do not stop fighting with one another. وَلَا تَتَبَاغَضُوا and do not start trying to have animosity towards one another. وَلَا تَدَدَابَرُوا and do not break from one another. Now, the Prophet mentioned these because when we talk about تَنَافُر, تَنَازُع, تَبَاغُض, تَدَابُر, these terms, when we look at تَنَافُر, is like you no longer feel that you want to be with this brother of yours, obviously because he did something wrong towards you that made you want to back off from him. When it comes to tanazu, that you want to fight with him, is only because he done something against you or took something from you. When there is animosity, obviously because he did something. So the Prophet said, regardless of what they do, your duty is to do what? To forgive them, to let it go. Not to hold a grudge against them. That's the simplest right any brother has over his other brother. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream sweet.
There Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him, has said, whoever remembers us to Ahlul Bayt and his or her eyes fills with tears, his or her face will never burn in the fire of hell.
Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, now I offer my son to you. See, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you. You have my roots, Palestine, 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 Palestine. Lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Sit somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: a ceremony is held at the Iranian embassy in Syria to commemorate the military advisors killed in Monday's Israeli attack on the consular section of the mission. The death toll from nearly 6 months of the U.S.-Israeli